If needlework is your passion, whether you're stitching by hand, machine, or mixing it all up, you're going to want to hear about the Mr. X Stitch Contemporary Needlework Prize 2025. This prize celebrates the best in modern stitch and it's open to creatives from all around the world, whether you're a student or an emerging artist or a seasoned professional. And the best part, you don't have to send your work anywhere. Just upload high-resolution images to a private folder we will send you after you enter. You can enter more than one category, for instance, hand embroidery and 3D textiles. Just grab an entry for each one. And if you've got a student ID, you can get 50% off the entry price as well. The deadline for entering is 30th of June 2025, and entries are now open at xstitchmag.com/prize-entry. Thanks to our brilliant sponsors, Bookmarked Hub by Search Press and David and Charles, and the legends at Lowry Workstands. If you've got the stitch bug, this is your time. Show us what you've got. Enter the prize now. Visit xstitchmag.com/prize-entry to get your ticket today. Welcome to Needle Exchange, where threads tell stories and stitches shape lives. I'm Mr. X Stitch, and I'm thrilled to introduce you to Owen Kelly, a textile artist whose vibrant, intricate embroideries capture deep personal stories and cultural heritage. In this first part of our conversation, Owen shares his early love of stitching, memories stitched into denim, and how his family history shaped his lifelong relationship with embroidery. It's a journey through punk rock, biker jackets, and the moving legacy of his memory skirt. Owen is a great guy. He reached out and got in touch, and I'm so glad that he did. 60 years he's been a stitcher. Both of his parents were stitchers. It was such a good conversation. I think you're really going to love this one from someone who you may not have heard of before, to be honest. If you enjoy artists like Owen who have a raw attitude to their work, then episodes 63 and 64 with the magnificent Peter Fredrickson are a must listen. Stay with us to hear how Owen's work blends tradition, rebellion, and raw creativity. And don't forget to follow Needle Exchange on your favourite podcast app so you never miss an inspiring story. I'll be back next week with the second part of this Needle Exchange. So until then, enjoy the show.
Yeah, I've got a list. I took a list down. I found it fascinating to do it just as a project. I mean, I listen to your podcast a lot, and I'm always, so I kind of know the format. I feel very comfortable with the format.
Yeah, that was what was quite nice.
Normally I do
this standard thing, what, that you're here.
I listen to it inside, and also I really find the people that you interview fascinating. I find people's processes and the way that they think and stuff like that. But I'm often finding myself like, I don't relate to it, as in I understand it and I found it fascinating, but I think to myself, God, I don't do it anyway. I don't, my world doesn't work that way. So,
interesting.
You know, I hear lots of people about, you know, the tediousness of it, and I'm thinking, for God's sake, if it's tedious, why bother doing it? I wouldn't do it. I love it. I have a passion for it. And a lot of people kind of fall into it, seem to like, they use it as their, you know, they found it as a technique and they find stitching as a technique and they incorporate it into their art practice, which I find interesting and I kind of totally relate to, but that's not, you know, I've stitched all my life. So it's not something I've discovered. It's just something I do. And so this business, also this people are so, seem so fixated over whether something's an art or a craft. I find that mind blowing. Of course, the male thing is all I find fascinating. You know,
yeah, also, we've got plenty of ground to cover. Let's be honest.
Yeah, and the European, you know, so Eurocentric kind of concept of embroidery. You know, it's all, you know, the concept of, you know, slightly elderly women, middle class women stitching away. You know. Because that's all that they were ever able to do. I kind of, yeah, I sure. But like, there's also like, you know, sheds of men in Pakistan stitching away embroidery and making fabulous. There's Persia. There's, you know, there's China is a whole another ball game of embroidery. Eastern Europe, you know, I'm supposed to go European, but you look at the traditions in Eastern Europe. I you know, I get the sort of the 1800 sampler kind of whatever. That's not my bag, as in I find it interesting hearing people talk about it, but that's not, I don't feel that's my tradition or that's my origin or that's my, that's not my, it's like somebody talking classical music when I'm into, say, punk or heavy metal. It's mm-hmm. it's a similar world ish. But like, my dad liked Austrian umpah music, you know, and I liked rock and roll. We didn't kind of sit down and talk about music, you know. I didn't feel like we had a shared. So like, when I see sort of like this, you know, that aspect, I'm like, even in America and stuff like that with the quilting and all this kind of, I find it really, really interesting because it's a branch off the same tree, but like, whoa, it's a completely, it's growing apples and I'm growing coconuts, you know, it's a different.
Yeah. I like that. Game. Yeah. Yeah. Cause I mean, so I don't want to classify your work. I don't feel like it's right. I want you to tell me what your work is like, but I will say this, it has raw power. That's what I think.
Thank you. Yeah, well, that's, gosh, yeah, no, that sounds like, I like the term. Yeah, raw power. I don't know. I've had it described, lots of other people have described it in lots of different ways. The psychedelia has come into it, and I kind of think, oh yeah, that's, I'm you know, as a kid, I loved cartoons. I loved the Freak Brothers and Crumb. Do you know Crumb?
Robert Crumb, of course. Yeah.
I mean, I loved that. I used to like Rick Griffin. Do you know Rick Griffin? He did. He was like akin to the Family Dog. They did posters in based, I think, out of San Francisco. In the 60s, you know, that kind of era, that where they did the posters with all the crazy lettering and stuff like that.
The name of the place escapes me now, but there's a theater, isn't there? And I used to just have a search on eBay. Fillmore. Kind of style, isn't it, with the typography that was all very groovy in that.
And I was fascinated by that. So I can certainly see a nod to it. You know, and that's the kind of thing that I like. I love folk art, you know. I love, you know, like when you look at the, as I say, the Turkestan, the Afghanistan, you know, that kind of Eastern embroidery tradition, Pakistan, Northern India. I love all that imagery. So yes, I mean, that style. I like crewel work. Yeah, I certainly use some crewel work techniques. I like the idea of. I can't sort of nail it down, and I don't have a word. I call it flow.
It's interesting.
Stitching.
It's interesting. Flow stitching. Yeah. Okay.
It is. That's a kind of a little ironical nudge at the slow stitching concept. You come across slow stitching. It's like, you know, like as in the slow food and stuff like that. And I've joined a couple of slow stitching groups on Facebook, and I find that interesting because they're doing it rather than, it's more about the process than the result. So I don't do my work slowly. My I actually seem to work quite fast, so it doesn't work in that. But it's very much, I'm very much focused on the process. So for me, I don't draw designs. I don't use patterns. I don't use a parachute. I just start stitching and see what comes out of it. And I kind of like to think I'm drawing. I'm putting myself in a meditative zone where I'm able to communicate somehow, maybe the wrong word, with my subconscious. So I'm trying to allow, so I'm kind of witnessing what I do. So yes, part of it is contrived. I have concepts, I have ideas, I have intent. You know I'm trying to do a piece for a particular reason. It's probably easier to look at each example, you know, each piece is a different example. So I do denim jackets. I'm well known for my denim jackets. And what I do is I talk to the client a lot. So on Messenger, right. We chat away. So I want whoever I'm doing it for, I want sort of things that are going to trigger my imagination, trigger my creative energies or whatever. Mm-hmm. So the date of their birth, and you get into astrology and symbolism of astrology. So if they're a Scorpio, I might do a Scorpio. I did recently one for a kid that I found out they were a tiger in the Chinese. You know, I got their date of birth and they were a tiger. So I thought, oh, well, a tiger would be a nice idea. So I started stitching a tiger. But they were also, you know, they were born in Georgia in the USA. So I incorporated the state flower or the state mm-hmm. tree. I'm doing one at the moment for somebody, and the state tree is, I think there is for them, is the elm. So I'm using the elm leaf kind of pattern design within it. What else mm-hmm. am I doing? I've got, they're into clocks, you know, watches. One of their hobbies is collecting watches.
Horology.
So I'm using imagery of a clock face. They want, I've done jackets for them like that tiger, and they're a tiger as well. So I'm thinking of maybe doing an adult tiger with a baby tiger. So they'd like me to take images that I've done for their grandchildren and put it into their jacket. So straight away, the central theme is kind of a grandfather clock. So he's the grandfather. So then surrounding the grandfather clock will be the tree as a symbol of a family tree. But there'll also be, keep looking away because I'm looking at it, but there's a mermaid on it because he's got a tattoo of a mermaid, and his granddaughter, I did a mermaid with a cowboy hat. So I like to hide all that kind of imagery in amongst it, but I don't sit down and go, oh, that's, I mean, I'm doing a piece to say at the moment, I know I'm going to do a tiger at some stage. I'm not quite sure what style I'm going to do it in. I'm not quite sure where it's going to go on the jacket, but as I'm stitching, the ideas will come, and then I'll go, oh yeah, no, that will blend into that, and that will blend. This would be a good place to put that, or that kind of thing. So it's kind of, but some of the linking material, I just go, oh, I like that design. I use a lot of Celtic designs, you know, because that's kind of ancestral. So I like using some of the rock art, and I use some of the Viking knotwork as well. But designs, now I'm not looking at a book and going, oh, I'm going to do that one. But I would have looked at a book over the years. So I kind of have a store of designs in my head, but they're all very loose. And they all come
together.
When
you first started talking about it, it was making me think of automatic writing, you know, where you're just going with the flow, not really thinking about it.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is what you've said further now, when you're talking about working on commission, if you like, working for other people, it's kind of like improvisational theatre where a story has to be told.
Well, I like that, yeah.
And, you know, you've got like a start point and you've got an outcome. But exactly how the pieces unfold to reach that outcome just gets made up in the moment, kind of.
Yes, absolutely. I remember one I was pleased with is I was talking to the grandmother of somebody who had commissioned. The grandmother had commissioned a jacket for her granddaughter. Grandson, sorry. Gosh, that was dreadful, wasn't it? But he was having issues because they had this soft toy that the kid loved but was getting very grubby and wouldn't let mum wash it. So I incorporated into the jacket it was a pig. So I ended up stitching a pig in the bath, in the bubble bath. You were getting washed, So like he would see his jacket and go, oh, can I give my, and I got a lovely little comment from mum saying, nice try. I don't know whether it worked or not, but I think she saw the pig in the bath. So that's the other thing I like, is the fact that the person who owns it, or the people involved, if it's a family thing, so maybe it's for a kid, but the mum will look at it and they'll see all the, oh yeah, I stitched, they have Irish descendancy. So they were in America. So I stitched the old Irish 2p coin, which has a Celtic knotwork pattern on it. So she told me this lovely story of when they were kids, they used to go to their grandfather who was Irish. And as kids, he would always give them a 2p coin. It was like after Mass or on the Sunday or something like that. And so I stitched into the jacket the design from the 2p coin. But then I also, you know, the shishka embroidery with the mirrors?
Right.
So I used that to actually put a coin, I found an old Irish 2p coin. So that is incorporated into the jacket. So if you weren't aware, you'd look at it and you'd go, that's a nice design. That looks nice. But mum and grandmum will look at it and go, that's, will be able to say the kid when they're older, that's heritage. That's part of your heritage. That's the coin. That's the type of coin your great grandfather gave us, sort of thing.
Yeah. And do you like working with denim then? Because yeah, you do a lot of denim jackets.
Love denim.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lots of reasons. One, I only really use, I don't buy material. I don't buy like new material. So denim is really easily available in the charity shops. I can get I can quite often, a lot of the people in charity shops know me around here, so they kind of know what I'm looking for. So I love huge pairs of denim trousers, you know, somebody with a very, very large waist, because I get a huge amount of fabric, and I can pick up, I don't know, I often pick them up for 50 cents a pair, and I can get an awful lot out of denim out of one pair of jeans. So I like the fact it's recyclable. It's tough, it's hardy, it's masculine, it's you know, there's lots of things I like about it. Go on, tell you an origin thing is years and years ago, being male and stitching, I had some pretty negative experiences as a kid. I remember taking a piece that I'd stitched into school as an art project when I was still at primary school, so I'd have been like maybe ten, I think it was. Because it was the year before I left. So I took in this piece. We'd been asked to do a project of our a piece by our favorite, a copy sort of thing, or inspired by our favorite artist. And we was most people, of course, would have done paintings and drawings and stuff. But I did an embroidery, and I took it in. And I remember the teacher was absolutely blown away with it. They were like, completely unexpected. I'd never told anybody I did embroidery at school. It just never come up. And they were like, wow. And I actually, maybe my imagination, but I actually think it almost brought a tear to her eye, you know, to see this. Right. She was like, just completely gobsmacked by it. And I was feeling like, oh, yeah, king of the castle, you know, whoa. And then I remember lunchtime in the playground and coming across some very unpleasant, because I was this big girl's blouse, because I sewed like a girl. And I had comments about being a girly for the following year, for a whole year, on the fact that just from this bringing that in. So I had a kind of a negative thing. What I was leading on to is I had a sort of similar experience at secondary school or boys school, whatever. I should have learned to keep it, be a secret stitcher. But I ended up, my brother was in a biker gang, and one of his friends saw, I won't go into all the detail, but saw my stitching and asked me if I would embroider something on their denim jacket. They had this special denim jacket called a cutoff that they wore over their leather jacket.
It had like a
I think they were something like Wessex or something like that, but it had this thing, patches on it saying what gang they were in and stuff, but there was nothing across the shoulders. And they asked me if I would stitch something on their jacket, you know, and I stitched, I think it was a classic skeleton riding a chopper, you know, with flames coming out of the back. I would have only been like 14, 15, something like that. And he was absolutely blown away with it. And the next thing, going from somebody who was gay and all this kind of feedback I'd had from people, I suddenly had this whole bunch of really tough bikers asking me to ride on the back of their motorbikes and stitch stuff for them. And so, and that that was all on denim. So it almost, maybe it was something psychological that it was all right for me to stitch on denim, because that was a masculine safety thing to do. Yeah. And so it's very comfortable. I love the fact that lots of people say to me, oh, you must have really strong hands and denim is so difficult to stitch on. And I'm like going, oh yeah, it's really difficult. I don't find it. To me, it's my material of choice, you know, like, so no, I don't find it remotely. I prefer it because for some of the thinner cottons, I like to use a lot of pearl cotton, and I like a high, you were saying about what type of stitching, it's intense. So I cover probably 90% of the fabric, sometimes 100% of the fabric with stitches. So there is that's easier to do with something tough like denim. If it was cotton, I'd eviscerate it, you know what I mean? It would also like the weight. You find it weird being stuck on, a lot of my stitching is on social media. So I was just saying to somebody was saying to me the other day, you know, they only see one dimension when people go on my Facebook or my Instagram and they see my work. They're just seeing it as photographs. I try and video some of it, but really it's when people come and visit and they hold it and they go, wow, this feels great. It feels, there's a tension, and then you can move it around and you look into, I like hiding things. And so every time, like Bosch, or every time you look at it, you go, oh, that's, I didn't see that before. And I didn't see that before. but you only really get, and things like I sometimes underlay with metallics, or or something, you know, or I'll do a bit of stump work, or, you know, to try and change the dimension of it, shade, you know, sort of shadow shading and things like that, so it looks 3D. And then when you photograph it, looks 3D, and then people are like, oh yeah, it must be 3D. But when then they pick it up and they look at it, they go, hold on, that's an optical illusion. And I'm like, yeah. I like it, because you're surprised by it. You go, oh, I wasn't expecting that sort of thing.
So you started stitching from a— No, this is perfect. I love conversations where I don't have to say anything. They're the best. But so you started stitching at a young age then. Can you dial back? I mean, do you remember the first things you stitched? Were there I'm guessing it was a family influence.
Yeah, origin story. Well, I have a very patchy memory. Just in general in life, I remember some things and completely forget other things happen. My wife has one of these like memories that she can remember a pin dropping 3 years ago. You know, I can't, I don't function like that. But I do. Family story or lore is at around 5 years old, my mum caught me trying to stitch in some— I'd taken a thread, a needle, and I think it was a tablecloth, or it might have been a curtain, and I was just trying to stitch. And she says I was five. So at five, I was stitching, according to her. I have memories of being very young, and stitching. I don't have memories of not stitching. You know, I don't remember pre. I've always stitched. So right. Yeah. So yeah, it's just been, it's been part of my life all my life. Now my grandmother lived with us, profoundly deaf. I was the youngest of three boys. So putting things together and stuff, and my mum stitched. They were needle pointers mostly. They were kind of my grandmother made kneelers for church, you know, those things right. you'd need, prayer kneelers.
Yeah, yeah.
And cushions. We always had loads. I've still got loads of them, cushions around the house, things like that. But it was all canvas work. My granny told me that she used to do fine work, and I've actually got a photograph of her from 1917 stitching. So she did do that, but by the time she lived with us, she would have been, I'm guessing, in her 80s, 70s, 80s, and her hands weren't as, remember her having very leathery, thin fingers. And I don't think she did fine work. I didn't see her do. She did teach me. I have a pen. I have a needle case just lying around that she helped me make when I was again young. So it'd be right. one of my first projects, and it was like delphiniums, and I remember her showing me how to stitch a delphinium, and then me stitching the rest of it. Wow. So I have that. And I have, yeah. I have some work of, now my grandmother said to me, she remembers her mother and her grandmother stitching. So I often use that as a hook and say, well, I'm a fifth generation stitcher. I don't know whether it goes back beyond that, but I'm a fifth generation. On my dad's side, my dad got tuberculosis when he was younger. It's how he met my mum, who was a nurse, all that kind of thing. But part of the therapy was embroidery. He learned to embroider. And right. he showed me, again, when I was a teenager, we were driving somewhere, I think probably to do with table tennis, and we stopped at Guildford Cathedral, and we went into Guildford Cathedral, and by the altar cloth, he showed me a bit that he had stitched when he was in his 20s, I think.
Wow.
So he had done embroidery. Now, he was kind of separate from, somehow separated, had a really tough upbringing, but during the war and stuff like that, and his sisters had, wasn't really in contact with his sisters, my aunts. So I never knew them as a kid, but I'd gotten really back in touch with Marge, who was in America. And when I got in touch with her and we used to write together, she sent quilts for when my kids were born. She made these like kids quilts for them and had always been interested in quilting. And then I think last year, through Facebook, a cousin got in touch with me, who was the daughter of one of my dad's sisters, sort of quite estranged sisters. And we were talking, she'd seen some of my work, and she said, well, I remember my mum stitching crazy sort of patterns on her jeans when she was young. So, and I know she was an artist. She was did paintings wow. and stuff like that. So it comes, yeah, it's in her. It's really
it's
cool.
It's in you.
It's in the genes.
It is in the genes. Yeah, actually, that's the strap line. It's all in the genes.
Whether that's with a J or the G, I don't know. But it's definitely in the
genes. I love that. That's amazing. Doing some casual math.
Can I ramble on?
Oh, go on, ramble. Yeah, ramble.
Example. I know this is an audio broadcast, isn't it? So, but it's hardly worth it. But if I just show you that. Can you see this? Can you see
yeah.
that? Yeah. That's a skirt. And that right. there, those red stitches there with the purple there, and there's a very baggy lazy daisy. Those are my first ever stitches.
Wow.
So that's that there. That's I call my memory skirt. So right. that's when I was learning to stitch, my mum got this grey skirt. And I have vague recollections. It came in a bag of clothing, like a charity bag of clothing. So I think it came from the neighbours. Of course, we're a family of three boys. I don't know what we were doing with a skirt. But mum gave me that and said, is that your practice piece? So whenever you want to learn a new stitch or you want to practice a new stitch, rather than having lots of individual bits of, why don't you do it on the skirt? Oh, yeah, okay, sounds like. Didn't realize what a brilliant idea that was, for me anyway. So I practiced a bit, and then as I got older, some friends drew some images on it, you know, like they've signed their names. You can see load the names on there. And then I stitched the names in. So they were like, right. Friends would write on it. Some of them drew this friend of mine, she's gone now, but she drew this picture of a pair of clown shoes because she was that's what her hobby was. She was a clown. And her name underneath. And I stitched that. Now she's gone now, but I have that on my memory skirt. And every time I see it, I think of Sue, you know, which is kind of nice. I think of her. And there's lots of those. And so that kind of progressed, and then it got to a stage in my 20s or whatever, may have been in a bottom drawer for a while, I don't know. But I have a little bit on there of, I could show you, but of the top of Glastonbury tour with 87 next door to it, because I went to Glastonbury Festival in 1987. Now, mm-hmm. My memory is shite, you know, so I could not have told you I went to Glastonbury in 1987 except for the fact it stitched on my skirt.
Amazing.
I went loads of years, but that I remember that year because it's stitched up. So there's loads of things. When I went to China, there's a the Special Olympics, I put a thing saying World Games Shanghai, a memory of it. All my kids when they were born, they've got, I even got there when the New York won the Super Bowl, because I was watching it and I just stitched it. So it's kind of now full of memories. And then when I was about 40, I think it might have been, I think it was under 50. I said, right, well, it was pretty full. I'm going to finish it. So I spent a couple of weeks just finishing the bits off that I wanted to do, and voila. So for 50 years it took me to finish, but I have it hanging in my studio, and I still use it as a reference because there's so many different styles on there, and there's so it's a sampler, it's a modern sampler.
Yeah But it's also a documentary.
Yeah it's everything. It's so many things to it. I love it. And
I was going to say, the funny thing is if it hadn't been a skirt, if it had been a shirt, you might have worn it. Yep. It might have got damaged along the way. So ironically, the fact that it was a skirt almost preserved its future destiny.
Very well. Yeah. And also a heck of a lot easier to, because it's just a plain straight, there's very little seams or tucks or whatever like that. Yeah. It's not sort of complex like a shirt. So it's actually very simple, easy thing to do. I say one of my daughters wore it.
I love the fact that you've got this, like you say, embroidery in your DNA from both sides of the family. Like it was obviously a natural thing. It was in your fingers. Now, I was trying to do the maths, and it occurs to me you would have been going to school in the 70s. So I feel like needlework was still something that was kind of practiced in school at the time as well.
I think possibly, not in my school, because I went to an all boys prep school, and I went to an all boys secondary school up until I was about 15. Went to through a rebellion, ended up going to a mixed school.
Right. So you didn't do would you have done home ec and any of those sorts of things? Did you do any of that kind of stuff?
No. I did when I went back to sixth form. I did a sixth form course, and part of the sixth form course was food and nutrition. So we learned how to, and I was vegetarian at the time, which really annoyed the teacher. but we learned how to cook and bake and stuff like yeah. that. But that was a mixed school, and that was part of a sixth form general studies course. Now I was a math head. My dad was a math teacher, and so it was maths all the way for me up until about 15, 16, and maths and science. And then I had a major sideways turn where I ended up in music and drama. So, okay. which didn't made, led for interesting discussions with my parents. But thankfully, see, I was the third of three boys, and my middle brother had caused so many waves. That my little move to into the arts was not they were I just think they were glad I wasn't burning anything down.
Okay, yeah. So, let's get all the wish fulfillment out on the first child. Hope for the best with the second one, third one. You just like as long as they don't damage. Yeah, themselves.
Well, I mean, my eldest brother did great, very academic, university, you know, middle one, total, as I mentioned, the Hell's Angels and total. He's now a very good artist, actually. He's a painter and stuff like academics didn't school didn't suit him, and right. certainly school of the 70s really didn't suit him, and I don't think it suited me, but we were so strictly disciplined, you know, we had the cane and all that, you didn't step out of line. And I went to a military school for a bit until I said right, I say I'd have been about 14-15 and I went, no, I've had enough. And I'm not going to be, I think it was probably around the same time. I don't know whether it is actually, but teacher, leave them kids alone. another brick in the wall. My dad hated, my dad was a teacher and he absolutely hated that song. But the idea of piling you into the mince meter, you know, that cartoon, and then churning out the mince. And I suddenly thought, until this revelation, either wanted to be a banker, an accountant, or a hotel manager. That was my. I look back now and think, oh my! I even wore a tie out of enjoyment. I liked wearing ties and hats, and
then Pink Floyd comes along and everything changes.
It did. I mean, I used to like. I was very keen on Strauss and Brahms, as a kid. And and then I got into rock and roll, and I was all those, you know, those American movies where they're all saying like, oh, the rock and roll, the devil's music. Well, it was. But I made a good living out of it, and you know, I can't complain. As I say, I can't remember the shining light coming breaking through the clouds, or what the exact instant was that changed my life, but certainly.
Thanks for joining me on another Needle Exchange. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'd love to hear from you, so feel free to email hello@needle.exchange, that's needle.exchange, with any thoughts, comments or feedback. And if you want to keep up with all the news, sign up to the Needle Exchange mailing list at bit.ly/needle exchange. See you next time.